you've downloaded the Buckeye Leafcast, featuring two guys who have absolutely no idea what they're trying to say.
If he has a good offense, he has a good...
So... All right, let me think here what I was going to say. I don't know what the hell you want to call him over the
what I say?
I was going to say something, and I don't know.
I don't know what it is you're saying, but I like it.
And now, here are your hosts for the Buckeye Leafcast, Andy Evans, and the intergalactic Buckeye fan himself, Mr. Chris Stefanik.
All right, Buckeye Nation. Hey, this is Chris Stefanik bringing you your weekly Leafcast. The esteemed Mr. Andrew Evans is not able to join us this week. He's a little under the weather. So I'm holding down the fort for you all, bringing you delicious updates on our Buckeyes. Now, 6-0 Buckeyes heading into a bye week. Pretty awesome. Halfway through the season. I cannot believe the season is halfway over. But just came off a 34-10, very, very solid win over a pretty solid team, you know, a flawed team in the Michigan State Spartans, coming into the game at number 25 in the country. Not a very great offensive team, but a solid team, you know, a really good defense, rugged defense. And the first test for the Buckeyes, you know, coming into this game, they've basically not faced adversity. They've been awesome at everything they've done. They've very early jumped on top of teams. And it's been just cake from there. Even if there was like a, you know, they had to punt a few times in a row or whatever, they were doing it after having, you know, a 3 or 4 touchdown lead, right? So this is the first time they came out, had a struggle the first quarter. Michigan State is a very physical team. They're the team that's going to try to get you into a slugfest. And they came out and punched Ohio State in the mouth. I mean, I thought in particular, Michigan State's defensive line came out and punched Ohio State's offensive line in the mouth. For the first time, you know, the Ohio State's offensive line just didn't dominate from out of the gate. First five, I mean, that's been one of the things that's got me the most excited about this Ohio State team, other than just the fact that they're basically haven't shown any weaknesses. They're all around so good. One of the things that has me the most excited is just how dominant the offensive line has been. If you have a dominant offensive line, I mean, that's going to be hard to beat. That's going to win you a lot of ball games, and you've got a dominant offensive line, and they've been dominant, and they came out. But I questioned. I was like, hey, you know, the schedule, they don't have any like world beaters they've played, right? I mean, their strength of schedule is not bad. I just looked it up. The computer rankings for strength of schedule had, as after yesterday, after playing Michigan State, had Ohio State as the 19th strongest schedule in the country. That was the Sagarin ratings. Somebody else sent it to a buddy of mine, and he actually sent me one back where like they had Ohio State top 10 strongest schedules in the country, which I thought was pretty high. I'm not sure which one, where he got that from. But Sagarin had them at 19 in the country. But if you looked at the top 10 teams by ranking, the only team that had a stronger schedule statistically was Auburn. So, you know, even, you know, Georgia is like, oh, we played Notre Dame. You know, we've got this big win over Notre Dame. That's a pretty good win, you know. Remains to be seen if that's going to actually be a better win than the Michigan State game. You know, Michigan State comes out the next 2 weeks and beats Wisconsin, beats Penn State, ends the year, you know, 10-2 kind of regular season. That might be just as good as looking as that Notre Dame victory, you know, depending on how Notre Dame closes out with, you know, who they have left on their schedule. Still have USC, Michigan, whatnot. But at any rate, getting sidetracked, the strength of schedule for Ohio State is not bad, but you know, is it great, right? Is it great? And so I it's not, no. So I'm like, okay, what do we really have? They've been destroying people, but is that maybe just a function of like the schedules just not been that great? So, you know, last week played Nebraska. Nebraska's actually a pretty decent offense. They have playmakers, they have good athletes, they've recruited well, a dynamic quarterback, some dynamic players at different positions. You know, Spielman's kid. I can't remember the name, Rondale something or such. But they've got playmakers, right? And Ohio State just shut them down. So I was like, okay, I feel pretty good about the defense. The defense, I think, is actually legit. We know that's a pretty good offense. Nebraska's a flawed team, right? They don't really have much of a defense, but they got a pretty good offense and shutting them. Well, this week I'm like, okay, Michigan State's a flawed team. They don't have much of an offense, but they do have a really good defense. Let's see if our offense is legit. First quarter, I'm like, wow. Well, this is interesting. Maybe our offense isn't quite as dominant as I thought it was. Maybe this isn't the greatest Ohio State team ever, like some people were saying, you know, through five games. Because, well, let's face it, through five games, it had the look of one of the greatest Ohio State teams ever. That was as dominant of the first five games as I've seen from Ohio State since probably 2006, Troy Smith's Heisman Trophy run. I mean, that regular season stretch for Ohio State was pretty darn dominant, especially through five games. You know, they had a tight game against Michigan there at the end and the like, and of course didn't do so hot in the postseason, but through five games, they were pretty dominant. This team was, you know, I mean, this team certainly looked a heck of a lot more dominant than the 2014 National Championship team, right? And that team had a ridiculously dominant offensive line by the end of the season. So, you know, they're, by all accounts, they're ahead of that, you know, as far as the schedule goes. But did we really have that good offensive line? Michigan State comes out and, you know, it was pretty ugly that first quarter. You know, Ohio State didn't do a whole lot of, what did they have, like 12 yards the first quarter? Lots of punts. I think there was a turnover maybe in there. I'm trying to remember when the sequence of events, how all of that went. So, you know, questioning it. Then second quarter came out and just, you know, annihilated them. A 24-10 second quarter. I mean, they had more yards in the second quarter versus Michigan State than what Michigan State was giving up on the season coming in. So pretty impressive. I mean, I guess speaking of some of these numbers, the Ohio State put up 529 yards on Michigan State. I think they were giving up maybe 280, 290 coming into the game. 529. Not bad. Rushing, 323 yards rushing. I think Michigan State was averaging 55 yards a game. 55 yards a game, and Ohio State put up 323 on them at 6.6 yards a clip. So pretty good. You're going to win a lot of ball games if you're getting 323 yards on the ground at 6.6 yards a clip. So let me just flip over and look at how that looked player by player. So that was JK with 172, 7 yards a clip. Master Teague tossing in 90 at 6.4 yards a clip. And Justin Fields, 61 yards, 5.5 a clip. Both JK and Justin with TDs. Now, Justin Fields, the only quarterback in the country with a rushing touchdown and passing touchdown in all the games. I know after week five, you could say that about him. So certainly you can say it about him after week six. He continues to impress. But yeah, so what do I think about this team after this Michigan State? The first time they were tested. I mean, they won by three touchdowns, 34-10, 24 points. That's a solid win. But they were, for the first time, tested. I think they were tested a little bit on both sides of the ball. And, you know, I heard an analyst say, he said, you know, this was beating Michigan State 34-10. What it was better to do that than it was to beat them 60-0. And the logic was, if you beat them 60-0, people would just dismiss Michigan State as another weak opponent on Ohio State's schedule. They'd be like, the Big Ten's crap this year. We still don't know if Ohio State's any good because they, you know, they haven't played anybody. But if you beat them 34-10, you're like, oh, Michigan State's good. And they won a contested game. You know, they came in. Anybody who watched the game would be like, hey, that was a dogfight. You know, they fought them. They came in there. They were feisty. They had to fight for it. And, you know, their challenges were raised, and Ohio State met those challenges, right? So they're like, 34-10 was actually better than 60-0. Now, if that's actually true, That's some bullshit right there. So I'm going to say, come on, man. It was actually better to beat a team 34-10 than it was to beat them 60-0. Come on now. But I kind of get what they're saying. You know, as we were going through the season, one of the things that did have me a little nervous was Ohio State had not, to this point, been tested. They had not had to face any adversity. And sometimes when you face adversity, you fold. You know, you want to see what happens to you when you face adversity. Are you gonna fold? Or are you gonna step up to it? Are you gonna step up to the challenge? And you want the first time you face adversity to be versus a team that you can handle some adversity and still come out with a W. Because that's at the end of the day, that's still the most important thing, is you need that W, right? We would much rather not be tested and have a W than be tested and lose and be like, well, but at least we were tested. And it's like, no, you want the W. But if you can get it tested and still get the W, then that's a pretty good thing. So I think, you know, you want to, when you're going through the season, there's a series of boxes you want to get checked off. And one of them was, hey, faced adversity and didn't crumble. Faced adversity, stepped up to the challenge, met it, and, you know, succeeded. So we can check that off. Another thing you wanted to, another checkbox is, had to play four quarters. You know, never, this team hasn't had to play four quarters up until yesterday. So that's another checkbox. So while I personally would give me the 60-0, you know, just let Ohio State come out and just demolish you, melt your face off, dominate in all aspects, I'll take that any day of the week. But we did at least get these, you know, couple boxes checked. And I do feel more comfortable now. You know, I mean, I don't expect Ohio State to every single game win by 40 points, you know, which was what they had. I think they'd won by over 40 points the first five games of the year. Yeah, that's not going to happen all season long. And I do feel more comfortable heading into games versus the Wisconsins, Penn States, Michigans of the world. Having seen Ohio State get punched in the mouth, having seen the offensive line, you know, get their manhood tested and then step up to that challenge and answer it. So feeling pretty good about this game. I mean, honestly, coming into the season, if you'd have told me in July, you know, Ohio State was going to be 6-0 with five games that they won by over 40 points and one, their closest game was a 24-point victory over the number 25 team in the country, I think I'd be pretty happy with that. And anybody who would not be happy with that, you probably need your Ohio State fan card revoked. You need your college football fan card revoked because you don't understand just how good that is. So especially, you know, new coach, four new starters on the offensive line, new QB, whole new defensive staff, whole new defensive scheme. A lot of returning players on defense, don't get me wrong, but it was a lot of returning players coming back from a defense that was, you know, historically one of the worst defenses ever for Ohio State. By some historical measures, was the worst defense by Ohio State ever. So yeah, feeling pretty good. At this point, this team looks complete. The schedule is, you know, by at least the Sagarin method, is number 19th in the country. That's not, you know, second best schedule in the top 10. Second hardest schedule in the top 10 right now. You know, I mean, Cincy just beat Central Florida. That's looking like a pretty good win. Yeah, I mean, Miami is the only team in that schedule that's trash. And let's not forget that that Miami game was supposed to be TCU. And TCU backed out. And then at the last minute, Ohio State had to try to find somebody to fill that slot, which people book their schedules for college football years in advance. So when you have a very short window to fill it, there's, you know, you kind of have to take what you can get. So there's not a lot of options available when you're like, need to find a game 1 or 2 years out, which is what they were looking at with the Miami-Ohio game. But I mean, just imagine how strong their schedule would be looking if they had TCU instead of Miami. Then at that point, I don't think anybody would be saying anything about Ohio State's schedule. But I mean, a lot of this is all beauty contest anyways. Right now, the Big Ten has the exact same number of undefeated teams as the SEC. So the only reason these teams are ranked ahead of the Big Ten teams. You know, you look in the SEC and there's so many SEC teams ranked really high. It's not because they have more victories than the teams in the Big Ten. It's not because they have less losses than the teams in the Big Ten. It's just because beauty contest and they're perceived to be stronger. Some of that might be the case. Some of that might not be. But, you know, it's like Florida and Auburn. Look at what a great matchup that was between two top 10 teams. And I mean, Florida and Auburn are good teams. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think they're great. Are they top 10 teams? I mean, I think it's probably just SEC bias that, well, they're good teams in the SEC. Therefore, they must be top 10 teams. And I'm not so sure I buy that. So, you know, a lot of games yet to be played. It's very still very early, even though it's six games in or halfway through. A lot of teams still haven't really gotten into the meat of their schedule yet. Like, you know, Ohio State has only played one of the really top teams on the schedule. I still put Penn State, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Penn State and Wisconsin for sure as tougher games than Michigan State. And Michigan might be a tougher game than Michigan State as well, too. So this, you know, Michigan State, toughest game to date, but still lots more tough ones to come. So, although next week they will have a bye week, and then they have Northwestern. It's in Evanston, but coming off a bye, I mean, Northwestern does not look good, I'm sorry. And Northwestern is very offensively challenged. I mean, I know they gave Wisconsin a game, but they do not have the kind of offense to keep up with Ohio State. I mean, what's the best, you know, best case scenario? What can Northwestern do to Ohio State's offense? I mean, barring like an 8-turnover kind of implosion, you know, can Northwestern hold Ohio State to 34 like Michigan State? I don't know. And even if they, let's just say for the argument they can, let's say they can hold Ohio State to 34 like Michigan State just did. Can Northwestern score 34 points on this Ohio State Buckeye defense? No, there's no freaking way they can. So, I think Northwestern's going to be lucky to get 20 points. And I'm sorry, they're just not going to be able to stop Ohio State from putting 20 points on the board. You know, they're going to be lucky to get 20 from their offense, and their defense is not going to be able to keep Ohio State under 20. It's just not happening. So next week, I think next week's going to be another, you know, they're going to annihilate Northwestern. This is going to be one of these, I haven't thought about a score, so I'm kind of being put on the spot here, but minimum 4-touchdown victory. So 28 points, minimum 28 point victory. I'm saying for this Northwestern game. All right, so let's talk about some position groups. I think any conversation about individual players with Ohio State has to start with Chase Young. Amazing. Best player on the team, maybe best player in the country, regardless of position. I mean, people are talking about Heisman votes for this guy. He did not statistically have his best game yesterday. He had, I want to say 4 tackles and half a sack, something like that. But several of the other sacks that other players got were a direct result of him. So like the Baron Browning sack, which was awesome. But the Baron Browning sack, I'm like, this is a great play. They line Baron Browning up on the outside shoulder of Young. And like Chase Young gets doubled. And Baron Browning just like has a free pass to the quarterback. And just, you know, he's such an athletic freak that Browning just annihilates Lewerke. So... But he, you know, he does not get a free pass if Chase Young isn't being double teamed, right? And there were several others like that. I mean, I remember, what's the big number 9 defensive tackle for Ohio State? I can never remember this guy's name. Son of a gun. Let me just look at Jashawn Cornell. That's who it was. You know, Jashawn Cornell had a sack, but I think it was one of those where Chase Young flushed Lewerke forward in the, you know, out of the pocket, and then like right, that changes the angle for the blocks, which then, you know, allowed Cornell to come off his block and get the sack, that sort of thing. But I think one, I think the fumble on the pitch from Michigan State, that was also impacted by because Chase Young just came in, you know, basically completely unblocked, destroyed the guy across from him, came in unblocked, and messed up the timing of that pitch leading to the fumble. So his fingerprints were all over the game. Tyreek Smith back, looking healthy, had a great sack. Jonathan Cooper in there, you know, he was rotating in. That defensive line is just sick. Zach Harrison, oh my God, that guy looked like a freak. So, you know, I was thinking about this. I was like, Ohio State has been really fortunate. When was the last time we didn't have a Bosa or a Young on the field? And it's been a long time. It's been, I think, 2012 maybe was the last time we didn't have a Bosa or Young on the field. I want to say it was the 2012 season. And I'm like, man, you know, this year was going to be the first year without a Bosa since 2012. And I was pretty sad about that. And then, like, Chase Young comes out and, like, let's face it, he looks even better than either of the Bosas at this point. You know, neither of the Bosas look this as good as Chase Young has been this year, as dominant as he's been. Neither of the Bosas were this dominant in college. So it's like, we lose Bosa's, we got a guy who's even better. And I'm like, oh God, what are we going to do next year? Because, I mean, Chase Young's obviously gone. Now it's going to be the first time without a Young, a Bosa or a Young. And I'm like, man, that Zach Harrison kid, I don't know. He gets another a year of seasoning. I mean, there might not be any drop off from Young to him. I mean, as crazy it is to say that. I know that coming out of high school, this kid, you know, and he's a true freshman. I want to say he was there in the spring, but he, you know, he walked onto campus 6'5", 260, and runs like a sub 4'5", 40. So, like, physically, that's just unnatural. That's a complete freak. Physically, I mean, that's as good, maybe better than Chase Young. The physical gifts, you know, he's not lacking in physical gifts for sure. So, at that point, he was supposed to be raw, and I really didn't expect him to, like, blow up and be awesome as like maybe a junior after he had a few years under, you know, Larry Johnson's tutelage. We're six games into his freshman season, and he looks like the second best defensive end out there. I mean, granted, maybe I'm overreacting to a good game. This was his best game to date. Tyreek Smith, when Tyreek Smith is healthy, looks awfully darn good. Yeah, we've seen Jonathan Cooper in the past flash some moments of brilliance here and there, just never really put it together, you know, play after play after play, game after game kind of thing. But I'm like, man, maybe we don't have a big drop-off next year when Chase Young leaves, as crazy as that sounds. And then they got the number one defensive end in the country the year after that. Oh, jiminy criminy. So, like, you know, when to take the takeover for Zach Smith, or Zach Harrison, rather, when he leaves. So, anyways, defensive line, ridiculous. Linebackers, you know, I gave Pete Warner a lot of crap. And even coming into the season, I said one of the things I didn't like about the bullet was it meant that you were taking Warner off the field. So, like, you know, we talked about this before, but quick recap. In this new defense, you either play three cornerbacks in a safety. So, Sean Wade, Jeffrey Okuda, Damon Arnett, and then you got Fuller back there at safety, and three linebackers. Or you bring the bullet in, which is just what they call the strong safety, and you go two linebackers. So what happens is Pete Warner comes off the field and Brendan White comes in if you want to go five defensive backs. And most of the time, they're sticking with four defensive backs and three linebackers. So I said, coming this year, I'm like, I don't like this. Brendan White is clearly a better player than Pete Warner. And this thing that they're doing with this bullet means that you're taking snaps away. You know, strong safety used to be out there in the base defense. And I'm like, now you're taking snaps away from Brendan White to have Pete Warner out there. And I'm like, you know, I think I owe Warner an apology. He looks really good. You know, I'm like, man, I was blinded by the past, what he did last year, and the whole defense looked terrible last year. But all the linebacker, well, I guess Malik Harrison was all right, but you know, the linebackers didn't look good. A lot of the people on this defense didn't look good last year. Pete Warner, not only does Pete Warner just look like, yeah, you know, he's an acceptable person to put on the field wearing an Ohio State uniform. He's an acceptable, you know, he's not like a glaring weakness on the defense. No, he actually looks kind of good. You know, he's like, I mean, he doesn't look like he's ready to be an All-American and not about to plant a tree in Buckeye Grove, but he looks pretty good. I mean, he might actually get some all-conference considerations. I don't know if they'll be first team or anything, but I mean, he might make like a third team All-Big Ten this year. He looks pretty good out there. So, and you know, what is, if and what I've seen of White, does he look better than Warner? Not really, no. I mean, what Warner looks pretty good out there. I guess while we're on the linebackers, tough Borland, somebody I've been tarred on in the past. He looks better this year. Don't get me wrong, he looks better this year. But one thing I will say is Baron Browning just clearly looks like the better player at this point. And they're rotating. That's to this. Last I saw, the snap counts was about 50-50. So Tough Borland is listed as the starter, or maybe there's an or. I don't remember if it's Tough Borland is the starter and Browning is the backup, or if they have an or between them where they're technically both starters. But on the first snap of the game, which means you're a starter, it's always Tough Borland out there. Well, and you know, like it really is like they're both, even if Tough Borland is out there, it really is they have two starters because they're splitting the snaps 50-50, you know. And it's I know a lot of people subscribe to the thing. It's not who starts the game. It's who do you trust to be in there at the end of the game? That's a big thing in the NBA. You know, I'm personally a big NBA fan, but people talk about all the time the starters and like, yeah, but it's really more important who's out there in those last 5 minutes of the game. Who do you trust out there? What's that lineup? That's really your top lineup, that lineup that you have out there in the last 5 minutes of the game. It's not the starters. So kind of a similar thing, but really, honestly, though, every snap that you're giving to Tough Borland is one you're not giving to Baron Browning, and he's not as good. So you're downgrading your defense, putting a player who's not as good out there. Now, I'm not saying that you go 100% snaps to Browning and zero to Borland. I like the rotation that they've got at most of these positions. I mean, a whole bunch of the positions out there for Ohio State, they rotate players and it keeps guys fresh. It gives a lot of guys experience. So if there is an injury, you know, Browning went down, Borland would be well seasoned. But it doesn't need to be a 50-50 split. You know, I mean, let it be like 70-30, 80-20, where Browning, whenever he needs a blow, Borland comes in. Maybe do it situationally, you know, where if it's more of a passing down, you want Browning out there. But if it's not a pass, if it's, you know, running down, you let Browning get a little bit of a break. But let the break down and snap count be like 70-30 or something. Come on, guys. It's obvious Browning is the better player. So, I mean, to this point, Browning's had a great season and looks like he's got a future in the NFL. I mean, he looks really good. The only really glaring mistake that I saw Browning make was that Adrian Martinez run last week where he had the angle. It would have been like 5 yard or less carry for Martinez if Browning makes the right angle, and he just took an awful angle. It was reminiscent of 2018 where he was always taking bad angles, and then Martinez got right by him and ended up being like a 60-yard run or something. But, you know, one play. I mean, through six games, he's got one bad play. I guess, you know, there was that horrible blindside block call yesterday that I guess, I mean, I'm no rules expert, but the announcers were saying, oh, that's textbook blindside. I'm like, really? Well, if that's the textbook blindside, then maybe that rule needs to be revisited because what the heck? You know, that would have been a nice little touchdown there on that return called back. So, and interestingly enough, that return, that interception was created because Browning tipped the ball up. He got his hands on it, tipped it up in the air. And, you know, from there, Jordan Fuller grabbed it and returned it to the end zone. But Browning could have pretty easily caught that himself. I guess it's easy for me to say that he could have easily done it, but you know, he had two hands on it. If he would have caught that, then he wouldn't have done the block, the blindside block, right? And he also probably could have got pick six considering where he caught the ball and the speed that Browning has. So had he just caught the ball rather than tipping it up, that probably would have been a pick six rather than the return called back and then Ohio State gets stopped. So they don't end up scoring, but let's see. I've been talking a lot about the defensive players. Let me just say, I did not talk about the defensive backs. They looked really good. Sean Wade looks amazing. Even Arnett has looked really good this year. He's not looked as good as Okuda and Wade, but he's looked really good this year. And they kind of came out and were picking on him in that game. He had several targets at him versus Michigan State. But he was doing well when they were targeting him. I kind of can't blame him. If your choice is, okay, I got to throw it either Jeffrey Okuda, no. Sean Wade, no. Or Damon Arnett, well, okay, I'm going to throw it Damon Arnett. And also, even in the past, I mean, Damon Arnett's always been right there stride for stride with guys he's covering. But his problem has always been he gets too handsy and gets pass interference calls. So I'm like, throw it at Damon Arnett. Maybe you'll get a pass interference call. But that wasn't happening yesterday. So he did well. And then he went out and that some undisclosed injury. I know that Day would not say in his tradition, in his typical Ryan Day manner, would not say what the injury was. But Damon Arnett out, hopefully not too bad. He does have the bye week to come back. I guess while we're talking about injuries, Thayer Munford went down at one point, but he did come back later in the game. And, boy, what a luxury. Thayer Munford goes down. Josh Alabi goes in. They didn't miss a beat. I mean, Josh Alabi, for a sixth man on your offensive line, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better guy. Went in and started last week for Brandon Bowen. Didn't miss a beat. I mean, they gave him player of the week, offensive player of the week, because he came in and was so dominant and wasn't even, a starter coming into the game. Never missed. Came in for Thayer. Didn't miss a beat. Thayer ended up coming back, so I'm assuming it wasn't too bad of an injury, whatever it was. But Mumford did come back, and, basically nobody even noticed, because why would you? I mean, they're like freaking, stormtroopers in there. One guy goes down, another guy steps right in, looks just like him. So the offensive line, like I said, they did get punched in the mouth, but then they responded. Sorry, just taking a drink of tea right here. Without having my partner Andy with me, I have to do all of the talking. So it's like normally I have a chance to drink my, click on the mute button and take my tea while Andy's talking. But at any rate, the offensive line, like I said, they were challenged the first quarter, but they came back out. And when I'm watching the offensive line, really looked at like how much push they could get or how much they were being penetrated. I'd watch the line of scrimmage, watch the ball snap. Did they change the line of scrimmage? Were they getting pushed back or were they moving their guys forward? And watching this year's team being as dominant as they are, one of the things I've noticed, I think what's actually more important than changing the line of scrimmage, although that still plays a factor, don't get me wrong, just getting a hat on a hat, just blocking a guy. I've seen this over and over again where, this team, what they do is they get a hat on a hat. And they don't, a lot of times they do blast a guy off the line of scrimmage, but sometimes they don't, but they still have a hat on him. And what'll happen is, they're right at the line of scrimmage. They didn't move the guy off the line of scrimmage, but he's blocked. Ball gets handed to JK. JK runs right by that guy because that guy is blocked and can't do anything about it. And I'm like, man, oh man, oh man, is this team good at getting a hat on a hat? And you just look across the board and it's like every silver helmet is up in somebody else's business, occupying a defender. And boy, is it beautiful to watch. And boy, do you see just like lanes just open up. And they are, like I said, this is the first week that where they weren't dominant from start to finish. But considering how they're starting, and I just expect them to keep getting better, and they do have a little bit of depth. So if there's injuries, knock on wood, they will be fine. There's the Alabi can step in there. They really like Harry Miller to come in there as well. Petit Ferrer. They like him a lot. They said it was basically almost a toss-up between him and Brandon Bowen at right tackle for that job. Bowen just barely beat out Ferrer, so I don't think there's a lot of drop-off there either if they have to go to that. So they've got 8 guys, and they're killing it. JK, he looks the best he's looked. You know, he looked amazing as a freshman, then maybe not so great as a sophomore. I do wonder how much that was just the offensive line. The offensive line last year was not getting a hat on a hat. And, you know, the offense was dynamic last year, but it was dynamic because Dwayne Haskins was throwing for 450 yards a game, you know, and he had those amazing wide receivers, and it was all about Dwayne Haskins finding wide receivers downfield. And it was not about running the ball. I mean, they were really struggling a lot to run the ball, and there was a big drop off from JK from his freshman to his sophomore year, both in yardage and especially in yards per carry. Went from like 7 yards a carry to like, I don't know, 4. Did he even get 4? Was it less than 4? It might have been less than 4. But he's back up there 6, 7-ish yards a carry this year and looks really good. Looks really good. I guess Mickey Marotti was saying how he went from 12% body fat down to 9. Which, if you know anything about body fat, is amazing. that's pretty cut right there. That is pretty stinking cut. But, you know, basically added power while adding speed, which is really hard to do. And, you know, he's got wiggle, he's got speed, he's a home run threat anytime. You got the 1-2 punch with Master Teague, the third, coming in there, who reminds me of like a Carlos Hyde, big kid, but yet is like one of the fastest guys on the team, supposedly the fastest running back. So that looks really good. No drop off the wide receivers, even though you lose Terry McLaurin, Johnny Dixon, and Paris Campbell. I mean, these guys, KJ Hill, all he does is just provide us a safety outlet. You know, like, he's just Mr. Reliable game after game, catch after catch. Let's see, he got 7 catches for 57 yards. So second best on the team was Ben Victor with 3. But 7 catches for KJ. So he's just reliable. He needs somebody to catch the ball. He's there. And he moved into second place all time in catches for Ohio State. So I believe he passed up Chris Carter. And now the only one that he has left is David Boston. Real great chance that's going to happen this season if he keeps continuing at this clip. Doesn't get any injuries or anything like that. I think he's probably going to pass David Boston for all-time most receptions. So, obviously, seriously, impressive stats there for him. Ben Victor looks great. I love that little run-pass option Ben Victor touchdown that they did. Oh, man, that was a great play. Fields rolled out and then sold it like he was running. I mean, he really looked like he was running the way he was holding it. He really sold it. Ben Victor came up and like acted like he was going to block. He was selling a run block, and then he takes off running downfield, and then, you know, he's wide open. Fields flips it over his head, and oh my God, the athleticism to beat out. There was 2 guys ahead of him that had the angle, and he just like turned on the jets. He came up and kind of slowed down and then hit the jets and like went right by him to get in the end zone. That was some pretty impressive wheels to do that. I mean, those defenders for Michigan State, you know, they're on scholarship too. And, you know, they don't recruit guys that aren't good athletes to play for, you know, Sparty up there, especially on the defensive side. So what he did to them, making them look foolish. And that play call was just great. I want more of that, please. Yes, please. I guess while we're talking about play calls, how about the coaching? I mean, the adjustments in this game. You know, the Ohio State came out and offensively looked a little sluggish. The offensive line getting beat up. Play calling maybe a little timid, a little conservative. And then, you know, they switched it up. They adjusted. Under Urban, it was like you had to wait till halftime to see an adjustment. They couldn't make an adjustment in the middle of the game. You know, and God forbid if the other team like switched something up at halftime and came out in the second half and found something that was working, I mean, Ohio State would not address it till like the following week, you know, so you were just screwed. You had to finish the game with whatever it is they were doing. It's like they just mid-game couldn't make adjustments. But you see, this Ryan Day staff and these guys he's got around him, they're making adjustments. So the offense makes adjustments and comes out and has that blazing second quarter. You know, last week, Nebraska comes out and starts running an option, something they hadn't done in years. They're running an option. It's working. They get 3-4 plays where they're just like, in Ohio State's like, holy shit, what do we do? You know, we've not seen this before. Ryan Day says, do you need a timeout? So Jeff Hafley. Jeff Hafley's like, yeah, yes, sir, please. Calls a timeout. They fix it. Nebraska tries it. They shut it right down. I mean, it took them like a minute. You know, Nebraska got to run it 3 or 4 times. They adjusted and that was it. Closed the door on it. So, I mean, they're making adjustments fast. They're, you know, let's face it. I mean, Urban got outcoached a few times. I mean, I love Urban, and it's hard to fault Urban when the guy loses 9 times in 7 years, right? I mean, that's just insane what he was able to do. But he did get outcoached a few times. He wasn't exactly on the bleeding edge of innovation. When he was younger, he was on the bleeding edge of innovation. The stuff he was doing at Utah and then took to Florida, he was running really innovative offense. It's not innovative anymore. Everybody knows that. Everybody knew what he was doing. They'd be like, up, here you go. JT up the middle. You know, it's like everybody knew what he was doing. People know what Ryan Day is doing. This guy is making adjustments. He's giving all kinds of crazy looks. And even on the defense, it's the same way. The defense is giving all kinds of looks and they're making adjustments on the fly and not having to wait till halftime. So I'm loving what the staff is doing. I'm loving them. I think like Ryan Day himself was a home run by Gene Smith, and the staff he's put around him was just like home run, home run, home run. I'm thrilled with it. I'm thrilled with the staff he's got and what the job they're doing. And I mean, like the development of these players, the players are all so far ahead of where you expected them to be. You know, I talked about Zach Harrison and how he's so far ahead of where he was expected to be. Now, granted, Larry Johnson's the best in the business, literally the best in the business. But hey, you know, that's happening there. Justin Fields, nobody expected Justin Fields to be this good. I thought he might, you know, maybe would be this good next year. Maybe. He's already this good. I'm like, what the hell is he going to do next year? How do you go up from here? I mean, yeah, I guess he's not perfect every play. You know, he had that one sack that he took for like an 18-yard loss or something. It was like, Jesus, dude, do not do that. Do not do that. Take the intentional grounding if you have to and just throw it away. Don't run backwards 15 yards and get sacked. You know, or the time when he threw it into coverage and threw the pick or whatever. His first pick of the year, by the way, not too bad for a guy, first ever starter. Took the, you know, into his 6th game before he throws a pick. But yeah, I mean, this coaching staff is getting it done. Hartline was an Urban Meyer hire, but I mean, he's looking like, you know, one of the best in the business. Let's face it, back in the Zach Smith days, the wide receivers never seemed to really get any better. And you get Brian Hartline in here, and like overnight, these guys got really good. Same thing with the linebackers. Linebackers would come here. I mean, they were regressing under Bill Davis. I mean, Jerome Baker looked really good. And then Bill Davis happened, and like Jerome Baker went backwards, you know? So these guys that they have in here, you can see the development, the player development that's happening. Players are getting better as the games goes on, which, you know, it's scary. We're 6 games in, but we're only 6 games in. You know, this is just 6 games into the Justin Fields experience. This is just 6 games into the, you know, Mike Hafley implementing his defense. It usually takes a good season to implement when you have a new defensive system, it usually takes about a season to implement it. We're 6 games in and it already looks awesome. You know, it's looked awesome from week 1. I mean, what's by the end of the year? That's typically good teams that are well coached, and it's obvious that this is a well coached team. Teams that are well coached by the end of the year are playing their best ball, which means as good as Ohio State has been, this is not yet their best ball. Their best ball is still to come. And the closest game they've had is a 24-point victory over the number 25 team in the country. I'm excited. I got to tell you, I am excited about this team. I mean, how can you not be excited about it? They're position by position, it's A pluses. Where's the weakness? Point to me towards a weakness. Yeah, I mean, like, literally, like, the only weakness I even see remotely close on this team would be, like, a depth issue at, like, a quarterback, for one. I don't even know if there's any – I don't know if there's even a depth issue at other positions. I'm trying to think here. Like, at any – they could probably sustain – I shouldn't say this. I'm knocking furiously on what does they say this, but, I mean, they could probably sustain an injury at any other position and not miss a beat because they – roll so many guys everywhere else. I mean, I guess the one other player that would be irreplaceable would be Chase Young, just because while they have amazing guys behind him, none of them are playing at the level he's playing at. And he's making all of them better because he draws so much attention. So, you know, they can't really afford to lose Chase Young without a big drop off or Justin Fields without a big drop off. But otherwise, not even depth. I mean, this team, what is, special teams looks good. You know, the didn't like the missed field goal yesterday, but hey, you know, I mean, the field goals have been, they did come back and make another one. They have barely ever have to even kick field goals. Punting has been, you know, I mean, this Chrisman kid's been really good. He's got a monster leg when you need a monster leg, lots of hang time, kicks it in the coffin corner. So let's see here. Chrisman, four punts, average of 48.3. None of them were inside the 20, but I don't think that he punted any time from midfield. I think all the punts were really deep, like, you know, Ohio State territory when he's punting. So where you just want to, like, boom the crap out of the ball and put enough hang time so that they can't return it. And that's what he did. So, yeah, special teams looks good. Offense, defense, coaching, depth, recruiting looks amazing. The ship just keeps on rolling down the road. You know, I was looking at the number one player in Michigan's class for 2020. His national rank, and he was, I'm going to make this number up because I don't remember what it was, but it was something like 93rd best player in the country, let's say, right? Oh, that's pretty good. They got the 93rd best player in the country. Well, guess what? If that player was in Ohio State's class, he would be the ninth best player in the class. So Michigan's top player in their class of 2020 is the ninth best player in Ohio State's class of 2020. And the crazy thing about this is that Michigan has the number two class in the Big Ten. It's not like Michigan, I'm talking about like, oh, the ninth best player in Indiana's class would be, or I'm sorry, the best player in Indiana's class would be the ninth. I'm like, no, I'm talking about the second best team from a recruiting standpoint, the team with the number two recruiting class, and their top player would be ninth. So there's no end in sight. There's no end in sight. You know, Day is recruiting at just as high of a level as Urban Meyer is, got the kids performing on the field at just as high of a level. I mean, let's not forget Urban Meyer won his first 24 games here. So, you know, he also had a pretty good start at Ohio State. I'm not about to say that Ryan Day's start has been as glorious as Urban's, but my God. Yeah, Urban did win his first 24, but he didn't dominate his first five like this. This has been domination, and they look really, really good. So, all right, I think that's probably about all I have to say this week. So thank you so much for joining the Leafcast. And as we usually say here on the Leafcast, we talk about some of the other stuff we got going on. I've just started making some music. I've got a YouTube channel. My stage name is Zen Large, Z-E-N Large. So if you just go on YouTube and search for Zen Large, you'll find me. Or I'm on Facebook or Twitter under like @TheZenLarge. So Zen Large was taken. As Ohio State fans, you'll appreciate this. So Zen Large was taken. So I could go with like Zen Large 2 or the real Zen Large or a Zen Large official. You know, there's all these things that people do, right? On Twitter, whenever it's taken. And you don't want to go with like Zen Large 2 or Zen Large 3 or, you know, it's kind of cheesy. But like, so people go with official or real. I'm like, screw that. I'm a Buckeye. I'm going with the Zen Large. So I'm on Twitter at the Zen Large, and same thing on Facebook and so forth. So anyways, Hope you're having a wonderful season. I hope you're appreciating it, enjoying it. And I hope you enjoy the week off, bye week, either whether you decide to sit down and watch football stress-free with no Buckeye game, or get out and do a little something else. The weather is freaking amazing. At least here it is in North Carolina. I'm pretty sure it is in Ohio too. Enjoy it. Oh, you know what? I didn't leave them like we always do. But then again, I don't have my partner, so it's kind of sad. Oh, well, you do it for me. OH. I'm really hoping you just gave me an IO there. All right, take care, folks.